Hello, hello.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Can everybody hear us? Hello, Hidden Gems.
You hear me?
I can hear you. We just had to go live today, an unexpected live, because we needed to celebrate with our gems. And John has something you have a promise now that you're going to have to, well, it wasn't a promise, but I'm going to make you promise something you have to fulfill. Something you said on a whim once as a joke, and now you've got to follow through.
Right. So I assume our gems that have been with us a while would know the inside joke. I joked that if we reached 144,000, that instead of going to the New Jerusalem, as Chad Daybell hoped to do, we would instead go to the Bellagio pool we'd have a blowout pool party celebration with our 144,000. So that was my
144,000 subscribers
on YouTube, right? That was my tease. That was my ruse. I think we were at like 50,000 when I was talking about that. So I didn't really anticipate being here tonight and reaching 144,000, but here we are. So
how perfect that it happened during the Chad Daybell trial. And hey, Chad, we've now accomplished something that you never did.
Right.
So
right.
We gathered right. 144. How are you doing? How are you doing behind bars with that? So congratulations. Yeah. But we also, go ahead.
He's right. I would imagine he's experiencing some rage right now not that he knows about us, but over the fact that was his dream, was to gather the 144,000. So
he's sitting here like this.
Yeah.
With hearing about it. Sorry.
I think
that's the best I can do.
I think we've probably been labeled dark many times over by now, but tonight especially, we're going to be on the light and dark scale. We're going to be really dark. So
proud to be dark, proud to have 144,000 subscribers for our not apocalypse party at the Bellagio pool. And we hit 144,000 around lunchtime, right after lunch. So I did my lunch live and I would have announced it then, but it hadn't hit. I went back into court and sat down and I looked. Oh, there goes Dr. John. Oh, there he's back. And we had, and it happened. It happened. And I celebrated with a few texts to moderators. We did it. We did something Chad Daybell and Lori Vallow never did. And we just had to jump on. And yeah, let everyone know. And thank you. You're all part of the original 144.
Yeah. So I just want to thank our gems for getting us there, and we have such a remarkable community, and I'm so grateful to our gems. Unlike Chad Daybell, back when we had, I don't know when I started talking about it, like 30,000, 35,000 subscribers. I will not claim the gift of prophecy, even though here we are tonight. maybe I should say that I'm a prophet.
On my light dark scale, I can prophesy that we are all dark. In order to be part of our 144, right. you are dark, and we're gonna have t-shirts that say dark, and I don't know, someone's got to think of it.
At least dark humor, yeah.
Dark humor, yeah. That at least
we're all darkly humorous.
Correct. We've got people offering stickers. So I have heard even people genuinely want to come to this party that has not yet been planned. We had gems right from Nova Scotia saying, you know, can you let us kind of know when it's planned? Because the introvert in me, they said genuinely would like to come. So John and I do not have a date. And I'll be honest, it would be very difficult to start planning while attending Chad's trial. But we do plan to have a gathering in Las Vegas. We will certainly be talking to the Bellagio to see what we could perhaps pull off, because we all know that we want to see John in a swimsuit with an owl pendulum around his neck. So
yeah,
we have some planning to do. But
who wouldn't want to see that?
Please be patient while we at least get through the trial, but we will certainly need a party after the trial, but we'll have to plan it for everyone to have time to, you know, schedule. So, but it is in the works. It is in the works. Total eclipse of the gems. Dark with the light mind. So many good ideas here. So many good ideas. Yeah. Bud Light. We're going to have Bud Darks, you know, at the,
Can we find out who the 144,000th person was by any chance? Is there some way we can?
You know, it happened so quick. I don't know. We were at 143,000 something, and then by the time we were back in court and I was standing properly for the jury, I sat back down. We were at 144 and something. I don't think we can. I wish we could. I wish we could. So if anybody wants to state claim, it's open. So
we'll investigate.
We'll investigate. Yes. Proud to be dark. All right. So John has been watching the trial from home, or at least parts of it. He can't watch all of it. You're working, you're preparing for another trial yourself, actually. But I definitely send him the things he needs to watch. And so John, you have watched now the bombshell evidence that nobody had ever seen until yesterday, a phone call between Emma Daybell and Chad Daybell. Or not a phone call, excuse me, a police car footage on the day Chad Daybell was arrested, June 9th, 2020, and a conversation with Emma Daybell, who's talking to him through the police car. Chad Daybell was arrested and had handcuffs on, but he had not yet faced charges. They were digging up his yard, and that was the day that the police found JJ and Tylee's remains, RIP JJ and Tylee. So I showed him that video, and we have a very nice color corrected audio fixed. We have that on our YouTube channel. And then, of course, the patriarchal blessing that Chad Daybell gave Alex Cox came down today. They did show this last year at Lori's trial, but the sound, for those that weren't in the room, the sound for the audio was terrible, and they've really upgraded it. So I also did a new video of that tonight, too. And I have all the text and everything, and then Chad's reaction to it. So those are the two things. John called me, said, should we do this? Let's talk these two pieces of evidence. So what'd you think, by the way?
Well, so let's start with a couple little tidbits that we learned from the police cam footage with Emma and Chad. The first thing that really struck me as that really stood out for me was the fact that apparently there's over $9,000 in cash in Mark's room. I'm like, what? I mean, I guess.
Yeah, that was a.
I thought, you know, you head out the door to go to Starbucks, and we have trouble rounding up $10 cash in our house, but they're sitting on thousands of dollars. I guess that would be consistent with a prepper mindset, right? The idea of having cash, although typically if there's an apocalypse, cash is going to have no value. So most preppers have gold or food or storage or so. Interesting.
I think they have the cash too. It's true. I went home this weekend to be with the family, and I got complaints about how little cash the Tooth Fairy gave my son. And so I checked in with, and that the only dollar, he got a dollar bill, but it was ripped in half. I guess the Tooth Fairy didn't have a full dollar bill. And so I checked in with the Tooth Fairy, and that was all the cash that was laying around. Our house was a dollar bill that was ripped in half. So I understand.
So the 9,000 was interesting that they apparently see some reason to keep that kind of cash around. The other little tidbit that was interesting is that Lori, did you catch the part about Lori's commissary money, that they put $30 on Lori's account every week?
Yes.
So Lori gets $120 a month for commissary stuff, goods, food, whatever she's buying. I don't know, but,
did you catch that Emma Daybell talks to her often?
Yeah. But I thought that was interesting. You know, it's a long way from Lori's fantasies of being right, rich and famous, or, you know, so here Lori goes from, I guess this is before her trial, but she goes from being on this pedestal and perceiving that, or believing that she's going to have all these riches flow her way. And now she's getting $120 a month. If she's lucky that people are putting on her commissary in her commissary fund. So that was interesting too, just to see that change in circumstance, that dramatic change in circumstance. So there were a couple of bombshells in here that are, if you don't pay attention, I think you can maybe miss them. The audio is not great, but I think the most obvious one is, and this is keeping in mind that Chad is not under arrest. There's no charges. He's simply being detained in a police car. And he says, I'm not coming back. So actually,
right.
Emma says earlier, it sounds like you're not going to be out. And Chad basically says, no, it's kind of hard to hear him, but he says, no. Right. So this is no catch and release situation. And Chad understands that, but he reiterates that point later. And he says quite definitively, I'm not coming back. And so I think what's interesting about that is in forensic psychology and in the law, there's something called mens rea, which is the basis of the entire criminal justice system. And mens rea means guilty mind or guilty conscience in some cases. And that's what they're looking for there. I think that's what the prosecution's trying to prove is when somebody says, I'm not coming back, and they're not under arrest, that's indicative probably of something like a guilty conscience. So I think that was one of the biggest reasons they played that footage. But there's a couple other bombshells in there. And again, if you're not, you know, it's, they don't necessarily stand out unless you're looking for them, but she talks about the law enforcement searching the yard, and Emma asks about the home, and Chad says, and again, that, you know, these are not the most obvious moments, but Chad says they won't find anything in the home.
Right? Yeah, I know.
Now you might think, okay, so what? Right? But I mean, the obvious implication is, but they will find something in the yard, right? Like, in other words, he knows that there's something in the yard. He they may not find something in the home, even if they take computers or whatever. It seems like maybe he took some precautions or cleaned hard drive. I don't know whatever he did, but the by contrast, they're not looking in the home. They're looking in the yard. Right. So he's essentially saying, well, you know, they're not going to find anything in the home at least, but they will in the yard.
He knew.
So that was interesting. Again, mens rea. That would indicate that he knew where the bodies were and that he had knowledge of it beforehand, before his arrest. Something else that was interesting that, and again, this is something that's probably less verbally mentioned, less said, and something just more from the kind of overall tenor of this body cam footage. But just a couple times Emma says, "I love you so much." And you know, there's this kind of,
you lose weight, it comes back. You lose it again, it comes back again. And if this cycle sounds familiar, you're not alone, and there is a better way. What if you could take a weekly shot to lose weight and keep it off? That's where Ro comes in. Ro provides access to the most popular weight loss shots on the market. The Ro Body Program pairs a weekly shot with lifestyle changes so you can lose weight and keep it off. Ro handles it all, even insurance paperwork. If eligible, you have access to a provider on demand. You can sign up online from home, no doctor's visits. Average weight loss, get this, 15 to 20% in a year with healthy lifestyle changes. BMI and other eligibility criteria do apply. Go to ro.co/hidden. Sign up today and you will pay just $99 for your first month and $145 a month after that. Medication costs are separate. That's Ro, ro.co/hidden.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
There's this longing, obviously. I mean, I guess, okay, let me clarify this. I guess if a parent gets arrested, obviously there's going to be a certain amount of uncertainty and pain associated with that. And, you know, some desire, I would imagine, to connect to that parent, depending on the circumstances and depending on the relationship. There's probably cases where a parent's arrested and the child is like, thank goodness. Right. So, but here you have kind of this unwavering devotion, what I would call this pure devotion, and this sense that she'll do anything for her father. So like this, there's almost this urgency about how can I take care of you, Dad? And I think that's important because it really speaks to this. It speaks to something that we're apparently going to see coming up in this trial, which is when the kids testified, when they testify, that you have this unwavering obedience and devotion in some sense. And you see it the way she talks to him, the way she takes orders from him. Right. And so you have a situation here where it's not hard to see why these children would do anything for their father, even if it means not completely being honest about what happened with their mother. In other words, when the issue of Tammy's health problems comes up, apparently we're anticipating that the children are going to say she had a lot of health problems and she didn't go to doctors. But that was Chad's narrative. And so you can see here in this body cam footage why the children will adopt whatever narrative Chad puts forth. Because you see that kind of, you see that obedience here, and you see that clinging to her father and the willingness to help him no matter what. And so I think that would go along with beliefs as well. Not just not just assisting or supporting her father when he's arrested or when he's in jail, but also helping him any way they can, even if it means stretching the truth a little bit. So I think that was another interesting part of the body cam footage. There's another moment where Emma's talking about that the police, she says they found human remains. Kind of is prodding her father a little bit about, did you know this? And he's not responding. And then I can see in your face surprise. But he doesn't respond. Like, the most interesting part of this is what he's not saying.
Correct.
He's not saying, oh yeah, I was so surprised, right? He's not saying anything. So again, that would indicate, that goes along with, well, they won't find anything in the house, but of course they're going to find, you know, bodies in the yard. I mean, it's the same issue that it shows that there isn't surprise. It shows that he has knowledge that the bodies are there when he shouldn't. Right. He should
have questions. I have questions about that moment. Go ahead. He should have.
And then one of the most interesting moments of the entire video to me was when she brings up that she's been talking to Lori, and Emma says, was she surprised? So again, Emma's sort of testing the waters here about who's surprised. And Chad says, she seemed bothered or disturbed. The quote is, quote, she seemed bothered or disturbed. Notice how he doesn't seem, you know, he doesn't say she seemed surprised. And he doesn't say that he was surprised. So he's clearly stating pretty unequivocally that neither himself nor Lori were surprised by these bodies, which obviously indicates that they had knowledge they were there, and by implication that they participated in the murders. By knowing the bodies were in the yard, they had knowledge of the murders and participated in the murders. So I think it's not a very long video, but it there's so much in there that really, it goes a long way towards, you know, making the case for the prosecution. Now I don't know if the jury is going to see it the way I see it, or if they're going to, you know, they're going to interpret the way I'm interpreting it. But I think this line about I'm not coming back is unmistakably, you know, damning for Chad Daybell. The other stuff, I don't know. I'm throwing it out there because it was interesting to me that there's multiple places in here where mens rea, guilty conscience, applies, and there's clearly evidence in here that he knew where the bodies were, and the nonverbal at the end where he turns around. The prosecution makes a point of saying, correct, why would he turn around? he shouldn't know. If he doesn't know there's any bodies in the yard or he has no awareness of it, what's he looking at? He's looking exactly where Tylee was, where her body was recovered. Right. And he exactly. has that curiosity. And again, you have that moment where he shouldn't have any, if indeed he was framed by Lori and Alex or whatever the defense is going to be, he should be completely surprised and he should have no knowledge whatsoever of where the bodies were. He should not even know that the bodies are on his property.
As Anna says, it appears no one was surprised.
Yeah. Right. Right.
And as E writes, it says, if you found bodies in my yard and I was in the back of a police car, I would be freaking the hell out. Right. And so would probably anyone related to you. Yes, I agree. That was the most interesting part to me was, I actually thought it was interesting how Emma asked her dad. She says it. And then she said that I said to the police, you know, officers, no, there it's an animal cemetery. And they said, well, I know what bodies are, you know, I, sorry, Emma, these are human remains. And then, and then she just kind of moves on. Well, he does too. And he kind of switches the subject back to finances. Like, I was wondering, my question for you, and I actually posed this in my lunch live, was that sort of like a denial thing with Emma? I mean, if that was my dad in the back of the police car, I'd be like, there are bodies in our backyard. Who put them there? How did they get there? Whose are they? I would be freaking out, even if, you know, my father wasn't. Or is this just a lack of curiosity? Is it a lack of curiosity or does she not want to know?
Denial. She doesn't want to know. These are kids that went through the whole Lori Vallow Daybell trial and saw all the evidence, or maybe they didn't. I'm sure maybe they didn't see the evidence. They went through that trial and did not see the evidence, and they still believe that their father's innocent. So it's denial. But getting back to this line about, was Lori surprised? And she said she seemed bothered or disturbed. What's interesting about that is they're bothered. Chad and Lori are bothered and disturbed by the fact that they were caught. Right, the being bothered and disturbed is not bothered and disturbed by the fact that there's bodies in the yard. They already know that. They're bothered and disturbed that somehow the prophet was caught, and somehow the guy who can see the future was caught, and the guy that's professing to have all these visions of the future and all these special powers, that he was caught. So, I think he's saying that, by the way, for Lori and Chad both. So that speaks to your issue about denial. I think, yeah, there's a huge amount of denial here.
Well, we have Lori Vallow's family member right here. This is third verse. This is Lori Vallow's first cousin, Megan, here in chat. And that's exactly what she pulled from it. She was annoyed her sins were being discovered.
Yeah.
She was annoyed they were caught. Exactly.
Right, exactly. And so it's exactly not... Megan. They weren't disturbed that there were bodies in their backyard, as the previous post you just put up would indicate. Yeah, if somebody found human remains in our backyard, I'd be like, right? Like,
correct.
But not them. Yeah, no surprises in their world apparently when bodies are in their backyard.
Crispy treat. These people seem like they're on mass doses of Xanax when this is happening.
Yeah, Xanax and probably some other, yeah. You know, some some LSD and hallucinogenic drugs for sure. Who knows? I don't know what they're taking.
It was the other thing. Can we talk about also, yay for all of our new members, by the way. Thank you, everyone. I've been starring some questions and comments. Collier saw what you saw when he looked back at that fire pit in the cop car. Third verse also says where he said, we're not Colby. Did you catch that or did you miss that? I didn't point that out.
No,
to you.
You know, the audio wasn't great. I went through it a couple times, but I missed that. What?
Oh, I caught it in court. So here's what happens. I'll tell you the exact quote. It was one of the quotes I put on Twitter. So they're talking about finances, and she's saying, "Don't worry, Dad, you raised us," which I also think is a little bit of a jab to Tammy. "Don't worry, Dad, you raised us. We're independent." And then she jokes, "Ha ha, with your wallet." And then she says, "We're not Colby."
Yeah.
Quite the jab. And it's interesting because during this time, Colby really wasn't hearing from his mom a lot. I think he heard from her in November, we learned. But he wasn't really hearing from her. And so who knows what Chad and Lori were saying to them about him. But she said, "Don't worry, we're independent. We're not Colby."
Yeah, it's fortunate that Colby was not a teenager or younger, right? He would have been at risk.
Yeah. This is a question from Davis. "Dr. John, what are your thoughts on the loyalty that children have for parents, even in situations that are bad? Because we also know that they're going to testify for their dad."
Yeah, that's an interesting question. It depends on the family culture. I think some family cultures are more they're more shut down. They're closed systems, what we call closed family systems, where information doesn't really get in and out of the family culture or the family system. And those families tend to have the blinders on much more, and they're more apt to have this kind of unwavering loyalty or devotion. And, we've talked a lot about the idea of enmeshment, and a lot of times families that are very shut down or closed will be enmeshed, meaning that all of their identities sort of fuse into one another. They're not allowed to be independent. They're expected to kind of toe the family party line, no matter what that is. And so I think you have a lot of those elements here, that this is a family that's not particularly open to the outside world. And so they're going to adopt the same beliefs. They're going to perpetuate those beliefs. They're not going to deviate from those beliefs. And that's how you end up in the situation where they're not looking at evidence. They're just looking at what their father tells them. So if their father tells them that Tammy was sick, even if there's not evidence to support that, they're going to take the stand apparently and say that. I mean, we'll see what they say. But I think part of this could be, at least a little part of this video, could have to do with that issue. It could be setting this up to really question Emma and her credibility when she takes the stand and she says, "My mom was so sick. We all worried she was going to pass away." I mean, never mind the fact that Chad had prophecies or visions of Tammy dying for years. For decades before, he always thought that she would die, and she didn't. So, this will be interesting. I wonder if, in watching this, I wondered if part of this was maybe the prosecution's attempt to start setting the stage for that later testimony. Because, I mean, when you put kids on the stand, they're going to have a certain amount of emotional pull and credibility, and it's going to be, compelling testimony, I think, for them to say their mother was sick. But we'll see. We'll see what happens.
We've already talked about this. I asked this question, but to take a little bit further, Snow White is again asking why Emma wasn't freaking out that the human remains were found in her dad's yard. Why didn't she ask him whose bodies were in the ground? And that's what I noticed, too, that she didn't even ask. She didn't even ask. And then did Emma not, she's, but her specific question is, did Emma know, but not want to be lied to from her dad? Or.
Well, let's follow up. So we know that later their father told them that it was animal remains.
Or pioneer children at one point.
Yeah. I think the short answer is that she's going to believe her father. She wants to believe her father's innocent. She's clearly not going to see the evidence or see what's in front of her, nor does she want to know it. Mm-hmm. So she's already developed biases about, she's not asking follow-up questions, because I think my guess is I'm quite sure that her father had told her earlier at some point that that they're not human remains. And that's what he said in jail. That's what he told them in jail. So I think that they were, you know, that's what she probably believed prior to that conversation in the, when he was, you know, in the police car.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you to everyone gifting memberships and for Chrissy and everybody tonight. Somebody is saying this is true. Heather Daybell did say that Chad kept his wife and kids fairly isolated. That was a question for you. Do you feel like this kind of shows that a little bit? It was interesting to see their dynamic to me. I thought it was a bit of a unique dynamic. People are talking about that. Someone said they shared an awkward laugh. Malo is saying Emma and Chad's way of communicating is beyond bizarre. Someone else is asking you to compare and contrast Chad and Emma's microculture to Heather.
It goes with my answer to the previous question about a closed family system. It's exactly the same dynamic I just talked about. Yeah, he isolated them because that's his way of keeping information from coming in and out of the family culture.
Okay.
And by doing that, he's able to instill or indoctrinate them with certain beliefs, or like his beliefs in particular. So when they later say that all his books were scripture and they believe that, it's because he set them up to believe that.
Yes. That's someone actually said that. Do I have it starred? No, it looks like someone actually put that. I thought I had starred it, but they said that they believe that Chad had already prepared Emma for this moment in many ways.
Sorry to
the person that wrote that with the red flags. I even posted it for a bit, but it was a great comment. Yeah. She turned on Lori. She wrote on an old Reddit post that Lori was a family friend that had helped her heal. And she clearly was talking to Lori at this time and asking how Lori was. She clearly turned on Lori when she went on national television to say Lori framed their dad.
Yeah. Well, she had to.
In order to keep her narrative.
In order to maintain her narrative of her father's innocence. And obviously her father is promoting that perspective. So again, like in these types of closed families, you know, there's a lot of value placed on loyalty, and challenges to that loyalty are often seen as threats. The children can be ostracized if they question or challenge parents too much in a closed family system. So in some sense, it becomes a matter of survival, especially when children are younger. If younger children start questioning the family belief system, then there's a threat. They could get ostracized. They could, you know, at least emotionally get kicked out of the family, probably not physically, but maybe in some cases. I mean, you certainly have families where you have runaways. So, yeah.
Miracle Mom is saying that it's her dad. It's her mom. Well, it's her new stepmom. You can't know what's going on for her. It's true. It's true. People are asking if we'd already discussed Emma talking with Lori. We have. What do you think that's about, though? Do you think her dad primed her for that, too? I mean, clearly with the whole family friend idea. Crime in a Bottle is saying, yeah, she seems to have seamlessly accepted Lori. You know,
until it threatens her father.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Until it threatens her father. You know, I want to say to people too, Emma has always been very close to her father. Eric Smith, who I interviewed at the end, wept over discussing Emma and how close he felt to her. Julie Rowe talked to Emma the day that Tammy died. They were very close. Emma Daybell narrated Julie Rowe's books for her after she got back from a Mormon mission, and she defended Julie Rowe. She very much believed her dad. And so when Chad was prepping people with, "I believe Tammy's going to die," she probably did believe that. And so it sounds like that was something he shared with people that believed him. So.
Yeah. So I'm just, I'm a little nervous about time.
Oh yeah. Yep.
So
you're a single parent household right now.
Yeah. So right.
Right. Is there anything else you'd like to discuss when it comes to this, or would you like to discuss the patriarchal blessing?
Yeah, let's move on. If you want to talk about that, let's shift gears a little bit to the patriarchal blessing.
Okay. I know
we talked about this before, but we haven't been able to see Chad's body language as much. I'm actually going to have to rely on you more for body language because the video wasn't great, but it did look like. It did look like he was at the beginning. So it looks like there's a little bit of a shift. At the beginning, it looks like he's anxious and he's moving a little more than normal.
Mm-hmm. So I had a pretty good view of him, and it was different than the camera. Today I sat in a different place. I decided to be a bit of a wallflower today. Stay out of eye's view of a lot of people. So I usually sit diagonal to Chad so I can have a good view. Today I sat directly, I was a lot closer to him, but I was directly to the side of him. So when Pryor is sitting there, I can't always see him, but was Pryor not there, or was Pryor sitting back? Maybe Pryor wasn't there because I could see him the entire time.
Pryor was video. There.
Was he standing? So yeah, I'm not. So then I guess Pryor was leaning back because I could see Chad the entire time, and I watched him the entire time because I had heard this. Yes, I did, Amy. I stayed on the side. I did. So he had his hands clasped the entire time like this, which is often for him. And honestly, sometimes he does do the steeple thing. He'll actually be like this, but he's on the table. His hands are always resting on the table in this position. And he almost had his head bound. And oftentimes he's looking up, or kind of, he's shifty eyed. He looked down.
Yeah.
He was looking down today for a lot of the patriarchal blessing, but I don't know if that means reverence or what it means.
Yeah, that's what, so it seemed to me, this is my interpretation, and I wasn't, obviously, you being in the courtroom, you're going to get a better view. The video is not great, but he did seem more anxious at the beginning when they started playing it, and he was moving more, which is atypical for Chad. So I think there was some anxiety to start off, and then it seemed like he settled in, and he started looking down. Also, I couldn't really tell, but it looked like maybe he was biting his lips, or he was doing something. His lips were turned in. Like, what is that? Did you see that? What was going on with him?
Welcome to Chad's face. His lips were turned in. Whenever I'm trying to do my expression, that's me. He kind of has very odd lips.
That would be. It seemed like he was doing a lot of that, but maybe he's doing that more than maybe I don't see that other times, but so that might indicate a bit of anger and anxiety. Mm-hmm. He seemed tense for sure, but there might be some anger there. Like, why are they playing this? Or maybe you're invading my privacy. I don't know. There's something there, I think, that has to do with a little bit of anger. Of course, you know, he's not going to blatantly show that in court. But so after a while, he kind of settled down. Then he started looking down, like you said. And at that point, he gained control of his emotions. he was pretty flat from then on until, so he went into what I call his prayer pose. After mm-hmm. he contained himself, he went into what I call his prayer pose. And then right after they finished it, he started doing the side eyes that you've talked about. And I mean, like more so than usual. He was like, look, his eyes were flitting back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
Which is interesting. It, to me, it's almost like he doesn't want to, he doesn't want to move his head because he doesn't want to see what people are, how they're responding to him. I think there's some shame there. I think there's some avoidance. It's like putting on blinders. Like if you turn your head and look directly at someone, you have to, if you look them in the eye, you have to see what they're feeling. You have to try to assess that person. But I think by doing his little lizard eyes, I think that it's almost like a type of blinders. I think there's a real avoidance there. He doesn't want to see what other people think, and he doesn't want to know how other people are reacting. And so I think there's a certain element of not only avoidance, but shame. Shame is the inability. Oftentimes shame is the inability to face someone else's gaze when you're feeling inadequate or you're feeling less than.
Yeah. You're right. Honestly, I thought there was, CC says it's a neck injury from his near-death experience belly flop, which is why he doesn't shift.
Yeah, that's a good point. He was really high up. So
he did say that his spirit went up.
Yeah.
Through his, maybe.
Yeah, it could be a neck injury. So this I'm going to go with that. Disregard everything I just said. Let's go with the
the shame thing, but I think there's an important thing about the shame that you said. It's he is avoiding shame. It's not just shame. There's a lot of shame in him, but an avoidance of it. He doesn't want to feel it. Is that what you're saying? Or is it just shame? Or is it him avoiding it by putting blinders on because he's refusing to feel it?
He's putting blinders on because he doesn't want to truly meet someone's gaze. Like he doesn't want to see how people are truly reacting to him.
Right.
Or to what he said. I think there's potentially some embarrassment because he's giving this blessing and he's giving the blessing from the position, from the exalted position of being a prophet, and now he's fighting for his life in a murder trial with the death penalty on the table. That's a big fall from grace. So I think there's a lot of embarrassment there, and I don't think he wants to grasp the magnitude of what's going on around him. I think he's trying to contain it, and one of the ways he's doing that is by, you know, the reptile eyes.
Is that similar to, so how he was putting his blinders on when Emma comes up to him and says, there's remains in our yard? Or was that, I'm also thinking, I'm going to avoid this topic and go back to finances so that this isn't later on in a trial.
I don't know what his awareness would have been with, I think he probably knew there was a camera there, but I'm not sure he was thinking about it. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Someone is saying this, Manson wasn't embarrassed. He acted like he was a persecuted prophet. I think in many ways, Chad, I think you can be, it's not embarrassment, it's shame and the avoid, right? Like, I think that one can be a persecuted prophet and have shame.
There's big differences between Manson though and Chad Daybell. Manson had much more acute mental health issues in terms of schizophrenia, presumably, or psychosis. So I think somebody like Manson who has more acute psychosis or tends to be psychotic more generally is going to have less shame or less embarrassment because they're so divorced from their emotions and from reality that they can't they're not processing anything very well. Mm-hmm. So You know, Chad Daboll was acutely or floridly psychotic. He'd probably present way differently, obviously. You know, he probably wouldn't be undergoing, he wouldn't be sitting at that table right now. He'd probably be in a, you know, incompetent, but, you know, depending. But yeah, I think they're quite different. Manson and Daboll are very different. Cult leaders, yes, but different presentations.
I know we need to let you go soon. Yeah. A final thing. After our Patreon live the other night, I feel like I had sort of like a breakthrough epiphany. I even came back to Boise and told my roommate. I was like, I think I'm finally there. And you were answering the question and that you believe that Chad Daboll truly does believe this belief system he's created and believes himself. And that's where I am right now too. I'm like, he believes it. And since I came to that conclusion, and a conclusion, I guess that could change, everything to me makes a little bit more sense in court. I think he believes his defense too, that he believes that he's sitting there just sort of misunderstood. But I want to ask you if I'm maybe going the wrong way there.
Yeah, I think so. I'm going to quote something Chad said. Let's go back to the Emma body cam footage. Chad says at the moment he's arrested, which for a lot of people would be kind of a come to Jesus moment. Like, if you don't believe any of that stuff, this might be a moment to start relinquishing those beliefs. But here's what Chad says. Quote, it'll work out. It's all in the Lord's hands. So instead of trying to figure out a way through those beliefs or that, you know, that denial, he goes back to what he's most familiar with, which is the Lord will take care of this. And which, by the way, in the blessing, I really urge people to listen closely to this blessing. Like, if you want to understand Chad Daboll and his beliefs, listen closely to this blessing, because this is someone who's a true believer. This is someone who, if especially the second half of this blessing where he's crying and he's getting so emotional, this is a guy who doesn't get emotional. I mean, part of it is that you can hear Lori in the background crying also. So I think you kind of have emotional contagion here a little bit, in the sense that he's also responding to Lori's crying and Lori's emotions. But Chad is not an emotional guy. Just look at him in trial. And yet here you have in this blessing that he's giving to Alex Cox, somebody who's really connected to this blessing and believes it. And this is Chad Daboll. This, if you want to really understand Chad Daboll, go back to this blessing and listen to it again and again, because for me at least, this is a true believer. It's hard to really see Chad Daboll otherwise after this. If you want to understand Chad Daboll's beliefs, his belief system and his commitment to it and the fact that he really believes this stuff, this is really compelling evidence that he does.
To someone that says, if Chad Daboll really believes his belief system to SOT girls, why would he be lying now? That's what I'm saying. I don't know if he is. I don't think there's anything he's lied about. I think he believes his defense. I think he's saying it's Lori's fault. I had an affair with her. She's a sexual being. She and Alex, you know, did this, and I was part of it, but I'm just this good guy. And it happened. I don't know if there's any complete denial. Like, it's as weird as that is. Like, I think he's just like, yeah, this is Lori's fault.
We won't know.
And he believes this.
We won't know where he stands unless he takes, we don't know his current beliefs unless he takes the stand and offers some testimony, which, you know, I hope he does, because I really want to get inside the guy's mind. But, and see if he's changed. I don't know. I mean, at least at this moment in time, on November 24th of 2019, which is after the murders. This is how Chad Daybell thinks. This is what, so if you're a forensic psychologist would go back and look at before, during, and after the commission of the crimes to assess mental state, this would probably be the most compelling evidence that we would have in terms of assessing kind of his mental state and his belief system at the time. And he's a true believer at that time. Now, when you're on trial for your life, things can change. You know, he may amend those beliefs, but I'm not, like you said, I'm not sure he has.
Right.
And I've talked about this before. One of our gems made the analogy with, and I haven't seen this movie in a long time, so you have to, made the analogy with the Matrix, I guess, where is Neo, have you seen this movie? It's been a long, I've seen it, but like years ago. Where Neo is, I guess Neo is the leader. Neo is a little hesitant to believe, but then people tell him that he's the prophet or whatever he is. And then he starts believing it. And that then leads to his ability to use these special powers he has. I think it's something like I've referred to Chad as the accidental cult leader, in the sense that he writes these books. He doesn't really intend to have, you know, he wants to be important. He wants these books to matter, but he doesn't see these books having the ripple effects that they have. He doesn't see people perceiving these books to be scripture. He doesn't anticipate that people are going to really perceive him to be a visionary and a prophet. And the more they do that, it's sort of, I guess in that sense, it's like Neo, if I'm getting the name right, I don't, from the Matrix, that the more these people believe in him, the more he starts believing. So he's in a role. And the more,
everybody's saying you're right, by the way, you can confidently say his name.
Okay. So the more, that's good. I told the gem, it seemed like a great analogy. I said, I need to watch it again, but the movie, but the more Neo is told about his powers, the more he's able to enact those powers. And I think you have something similar with Chad Daybell. The more he's placed in that role and the more people shower praise on him and believe in him. And Lori in particular, Lori is the one who probably heaps the most praise on him, praise towards him, and believes in him the most. Then it starts snowballing, and he begins to believe that he's a prophet and that he deserves to be in that role.
Yeah. Just to believe that Chad truly believes it now has really helped me in some better light this week. So thank you for that. I liked a comment though that we received today where they after today in court, which was very bizarre, he said, I wonder what the jury's thinking, if they actually believe this, or they're like, what the actual F am I in some sort of experiment? You know, is this not really a jury, but am I in just some sort of experiment? Oh, did John freeze?
I was reading some of the comments. Someone said, Dr. John, it's good practice to rewatch Keanu Reeves movies just in general. Yes, I agree. I'm gonna have to go on a Keanu Reeves binge watching.
You can start with Speed.
I probably don't want to start with Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Start with Bill and Ted's, go to Speed, his two best films.
Yeah, maybe I might have to skip Bill and Ted's, but and especially Bill and Ted's 2. I haven't seen that, but yeah, no, Speed was okay. Well, Speed was good. If I remember, Speed was pretty good. The Matrix is good. He's, you know, Point Break was an amazing movie for the 90s or 80s. I don't remember. It's been so long, but he's done some good movies. But let's get back to Chad Daybell here.
Well, anyway, we could actually let you get back to we'll let you get back to your household duties, and I'll get back to editing. As we just want to thank all of you. We have almost 3,000 people here for a surprise live tonight. Please, it truly does help us to hit like and to subscribe if you haven't. And we are working so hard, sacrificing some time together, spouses and parenting and working, because this trial is so important to us. And so thank you everyone for your support tonight and for your support always. I will be on, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, I wasn't done making some of my major point.
I thought you were about to say we still need to talk about the Matrix, but ahead and then I'll conclude.
I'm like, wait,
goodbye. I'm backtracking.
You're just about kidding. To exit without talking about the blessing.
Well, I thought you needed to get back, and so I was just trying to hurry.
We'll
keep you here all night. Keep going.
I'll do, but as long as we've come this far,
let's go. Go on. I'm here. Yeah. I'm here for the combo.
Yeah. So I'm just going to point out a few parts of the blessing that I think are real. If you want to understand Chad Daybell, there's a recurring theme throughout this blessing, which has to do with purity. And we've talked about this before, this idea of disgust sensitivity. Disgust sensitivity is highly correlated with certain beliefs and with certain moral stance that people that are lower in terms of disgust sensitivity tend to be a little more rigid, and they tend to be particularly more rigid when it comes to morality. And I mean, you certainly see that with Chad Daybell. He's not exactly the most open-minded guy, but he talks about this. One of the things he says about Alex is, "Thy soul is cleansed and all is well." He says later that Alex will be known throughout the world for his good-heartedness and a willingness to save souls, that he will testify as a prophet. So he's deeming Alex to be a prophet. And then he says this, he talks about angels and how pure they are. This is a quote. He says that Alex will be he will be involved in, quote, rescuing the pure and innocent and leading them safely in dozens of instances. So why is this important? Because his whole belief system is, a lot of his belief system has this foundation and this idea of purity. That if you're pure and innocent, that somehow you're saved. And if you're not, then you're damned. And so this idea of saving souls is related to this idea of purity and innocence. And the reason this is important, because if you want to understand how Chad Daybell can get to murder, and especially murdering kids, it's because he didn't see these kids as pure and innocent. He saw them as demonic. He saw them as somehow tainted. He saw them as impure. Right. And so, like, you see in this blessing, just the simplicity of his beliefs and how he's reducing everything to kind of this idea of purity, which, by the way, that's a major element in a lot of cults. The idea of purification, purifying the world. He talks about the angel I forget the exact reference here, but the angel will cleanse the earth before or after the apocalypse, before the New Jerusalem. And so you kind of really, you know, again, getting inside Chad Daybell's mind, you kind of see the importance of this.
Thank you. Yeah. You're here. Anything else?
No, that's that's it. That's a long way from Neo, but
I like that. Yeah.
Yeah, just some final thoughts there. And drawing parallels with other cults and other cults that put this tremendous stress on purity and cleansing, and typically the way you accomplish that is you leave this world, right? That if this world's tainted and impure and damned, or whatever, however you want to see it, if it's dirty, and you know, and this ties, disgust sensitivity has a strong relationship with the body as well. That the body is never completely pure. The body, right, is harder to control than something that's spiritual, something that's otherworldly. And so some of this has to do with kind of leaving behind any disgust or imperfections that might be attributed to the body. And again, this goes to the idea of translated beings, that they're not human, they're pure. And so the whole basis of this thought, of this belief system, is to try to transcend something that has to do, that's not pure, that has to do with being human. And so that is the type of belief system that gets you to the place that Chad Daybell and Lori, who now get convicted murderer, it gets you to the place that where they land.
That was brilliant. Thank you. I want to say, when I saw Chad look at the photos that the jurors were seeing of the remains, and there were three or four jurors crying, Chad was not one of them, but he did shake his head. And sometimes I've wondered if it was a bit of disgust or some being appalled, despite the fact that he did this.
Well, I don't know. You know, part of the belief system here, I think, there's a strange sense in which I think Chad and Lori believe that they were helping Charles and JJ and Tylee, because they were removing the impurities and they were sending them to a world that was much purer. And so in a twisted, in a very peculiar twist of logic, I think they would argue that in some ways they were doing these folks a favor, because they were demonic and they were impure, and they could achieve this purity by leaving their bodies and going somewhere else.
Yes. And good point, Annalise, New Zealand. We know that Chad spent at least 90 minutes with Emma just before this, likely conditioning her and to be supportive of him, right? He was there with her. Thank you, John. I miss you. And thank you to our gems who keep me company every day. We're in chat every day during the live trial stream. And even though I'm not writing as much, so that I can make sure that I stay well-behaved in court, I look at my phone and I see everyone chatting, and I'm just so grateful that all of you are keeping me company while I'm away from home. So every day we are in our live stream, watching the trial together. And if you don't have a trial home, you are welcome here. And yeah, this live stream will redirect to tomorrow's live stream. I also want to let you all know that tomorrow night I will be on Web Sleuths with Trisha Griffith. We have a really nice time over there. Trisha is a friend. She is actually the one that named Dr. John. It wasn't just something I started calling him when we were dating, even though a lot of you probably think that. I wasn't like, "Hello, Dr. John. Nice to meet you." No, Trisha Griffith told John over Web Sleuths that he needed to be Dr. John, and it stuck. So it was not my natural pet name
for him. Oh, I thought on our first date, I told you have to call me Dr. John.
You're like, "That's doctor to you."
Yeah. Right. It's like the, it's like one of my favorite quotes from the Austin Powers movies from Dr. Evil.
Yes. Where he says,
he didn't go to freaking evil school to be,
we've gone from the-
to be called Mr. Evil. He didn't go to evil school for nothing. He went to evil school so he could be called Dr. Evil. So
we've gone from the Matrix to Bill and Ted's,
right?
To Austin Power. I think it's time to go to bed. I think that's a call. But nothing like a doctor quoting fellow doctor, Dr. Evil.
Dr. Evil, yeah. Dr. Evil,
all right.
one of the great psychologists in film history. I did want to leave with one further point, and that is it towards the end of the blessing. He tells Alex that your veil will be gone. And that's a really critical moment, by the way. And I forgot to mention it. I'll leave with the final thought here. But when I heard that again, it struck me more this time. I don't know why, but he's really like the whole idea that the veil has disappeared. So Chad's veil was ripped and that gave him the status of prophecy. But to have your veil gone, that basically means you're a deity. So the veil is what separates the human from the divine. And he's telling Alex, you can be like me. Your veil can be gone. You can be a deity. And so it's an incredible moment in that blessing. And again, getting back to like, what is it that Chad believes? That's such a critical element in his belief that in some ways he sees this whole idea of not just ripping the veil, but eliminating the veil altogether as being kind of the key to achieving, you know, divinity, immortality, transcendence. And, you know, from my perspective, clearly that's an impossible goal. You know, I mean, the veil is a metaphor, first of all. Let's say that. Like, there's not literally a veil in your brain that you can have a surgeon remove. So that I'm aware of, you know, maybe it's in the prefrontal cortex somewhere, but I don't think there's a veil in the brain that's that obvious. Chad believes that, by the way. He thinks there's literally a veil in his brain. So I guess I just want to mention that because it was something at the end of the blessing that really stood out for me. And just this whole idea, I'll end where we started our whole podcast years ago, 4 years ago, with the idea that, you know, it might be worthwhile to seek some level of transcendence or excellence or the impossible. I don't know, whatever we want to call it, but it's really not attainable. And so this idea that somehow somebody like Chad Daybell attains that and believes he can attain it and thinks he did attain it is problematic, right? Like, I guess my point is, like, in the end, being human is good. That we should celebrate what we have and who we are. And even if our bodies are imperfect and they fall apart, they're still a part of us. They're still what they're a part of what makes us human. And I think that we can celebrate, or I want to celebrate that. So this whole idea that somehow we're going to eliminate these veils and become translated beings is not only unrealistic, but a denial of who we fundamentally are as human beings.
Thank you. I will go meet you in my portal closet later tonight.
Don't forget to wear your helmet. There's in the portal closet that there's like a bullseye. And if you miss it just by a fraction of an inch and you're not wearing a helmet, you're going to get really injured. So if you're going to do the portal, if you're going to do the portal closet, make sure you wear a helmet.
People will pass over the portal about. Closet, and I will go to bed because we're both punchy. So it's
It's been a long day
for sleep. I love us humans too, Kathy. Turbulence of the portal. Thank you, everyone. I'll see you tomorrow in our live chat here in Hidden True Crime. And then I am also scheduled for Core TV. News is always changing, so I never completely announced that. It could change an hour before. But right now, I'm scheduled for it. And then Web Sleuths. So thank you, everyone. For those that do listen to our podcast, forgive me. I am behind. I was actually going to edit today, but I got a Daybell tip about Melanie Gibb. I wanted to take the phone call, and then I wanted to jump on with Dr. John. So thank you, everyone. Here's to being human. That's what we will celebrate at our Bellagio pool party. And someone also said, let's not forget JJ, Tylee, Charles, and Tammy. Also, and of course, yes, this is more than anything, as I always say, about justice, and let's never forget them. Thank you. All right, everyone. Have a great night. See ya. Okay.
Good night.
Good night.
Hello, Hidden Gems. It's Lauren with Hidden, a true crime podcast. As a TV reporter, I learned the art of visual storytelling. So if you're like me, you enjoy listening, but also viewing. You can actually head to our YouTube channel, Hidden True Crime, to watch these interviews. Hit the subscribe button for surprise lives and breaking news. And for exclusive content, things Dr. John and I only dare say behind a paywall, become a Patreon member at patreon.com/hiddentruecrime. You'll find bonus episodes, early releases, and insider info. Thank you for your endless support.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.